So today we're going to continue to look at Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. And we're continuing the idea of if Jesus is the answer, what is the question? When we look at this passage, there's a lot of details in every single word of these four verses, which is so powerful. So I want us again to look at this passage, verses 1 through 4, as if we've never read it before, to kind of see the truth that is in this for us. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. And he is the radiance of his glory and the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by the word of his power. When he had made purification of sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. Having become as much better than the angels as he has inherited a more excellent name than they. Now, the reason that we are focusing on this idea of if Jesus is the answer, what is the question, is it's coming from the basis that Jesus is the answer for every situation. Jesus is the answer for every problem. Everything that we face, it all comes back to Jesus. And when we talk about the idea of the manger scene and the nativity and Advent and Christmas, it all comes back to the idea of Jesus, which is reminding us of the reason why Jesus came in the first place and why Jesus needs to be the center of our life. It is impossible to follow Jesus without Jesus being the center of your life. Jesus has to be it. And one of the things that we need to understand with that, which is a basic idea, is that Jesus isn't just somebody who lived 2,000 years ago. But he is somebody who is actually there at creation. He's been there from eternity. He will continue into eternity. And he's someone that is with us right now. That's one of the things that I think is so easy for us to forget about, is that Jesus Christ is with us right now. If you just stop and think about that thought just for a moment, that Jesus Christ is with you right now. How easily we take that for granted, and how easy we forget that truth. And I wonder if how often in my life, if I would remember that every single second, what would I do different? What would I say different? Would my attitude be any different? Would my reaction to things be different? Would I be a different person if I recognized the truth that Jesus was with me all the time? Because that's really what the Christmas story is all about. When you come to the manger and you come to Jesus coming down, is that no longer is God up here somewhere, and no longer do we have to talk to a priest in order to get in touch with God, but now Jesus himself, he is here, and he is here in the flesh, and people and the disciples and everybody were able to walk amongst him, which in the verse that we're getting into next week, is that Jesus was the exact representation of the being of God. Which means if you want to know who God is, look at Jesus. You want to know what God acts like, look at Jesus. You want to know what God likes, look at Jesus. You want to know who God loves, look at Jesus. You want to know who God accepts, look at Jesus. You want to know how God treats people, look at Jesus. You want to know how he treats women, look at Jesus. You want to know how God treats kids, look at Jesus. Everything comes back to Jesus because he's the exact representation of God. And that's the reason he came, was to show everybody who God was. And when he stepped into the church world at the time, it was a constant correction of them because they were completely confused on who God was, and he came and showed them who God was. When they were expecting somebody to be on a throne, he's on his knees washing their feet and saying, no, this is who God is. So a complete different picture of who Jesus is. And it's important for us to remember that him coming wasn't just something that happened 2,000 years ago. He lived and he died and that's it. But he lived and he continued to live and he rose from the dead and he's living now and he's with us right now and he's with us in this very moment. Now the question that we have today to answer when we're asking these questions is, the question is, where did I come from? And I wonder if any of you have ever thought that question before. Where did I come from? Have any of you ever wondered about you and your purpose and why in the world are you here? What is the meaning of your existence? Have you ever even questioned that? Have you ever had a moment in time where you just questioned, why in the world am I even here? A lot of times that question comes after something's difficult, after something's hard to get through, after you experience something that you didn't expect to experience, after you're looking at your life and you're looking and you're saying, man, I tried that, that didn't work. I tried that, that didn't work. I haven't been successful at this. I haven't been successful at that. I compare it to others and I see what everybody else is doing. And then you begin, that leads into the question of what is the purpose of my existence? Why am I even here? What is this all about? And a lot of times we get confused with the answers that the world is throwing at us because the world says we can find our purpose in so many different ways. And if we feel good about ourselves, things would be much better. If we would set goals and we would achieve those goals, we would feel better about ourselves and things would be much better. And there's some truth to that. It does help us in that way. But the overall sense, the overall purpose of why we are here is what is important for us to understand. And that's what is important for us to grasp. And that really becomes our ultimate motivation. And where this is at in this passage is in verse 2, when he says, in these last days he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom he also made the world. Through whom he also made the world. And this is Jesus that he's talking about, the Son of God. And he's saying in this statement that it was through Jesus that God made the world. Now the word through in the Greek text is a vehicle. It's a pathway. It's how you get to a conclusion. So God is creating the world, but he's creating the world through Jesus. It's only through Jesus, the vehicle, that he created the world. So that means that, as has said over and over, that Jesus was there at creation. The Gospel of John tells us this. Colossians affirms this in the New Testament, that Jesus was there at creation. So it was through Jesus that everything came into being. So I want you to think about that just for a moment. Go back to Genesis chapter 1, a very powerful creation story. And every time that it says, and God said, just remember that it was through Jesus that God said it. And that Jesus was the vehicle that created every single thing. Now, when he gets to this idea that it's through whom that through Jesus, he made the world. When we look at the term world in the Greek text, this is a very fun term in my mind because it doesn't seem to conclude what I would expect it to say. Because when you think of world or worlds, and your translation, as some might say, universes, there's many different translations that are referring to this, what is being stated here in this verse in Hebrews. We think of the globe, right? Is that the first thing we think of? God created the world, so we think of the globe. Or if we think of the universe, we think of the globe and all of the other planets and everything in the solar system, and we think that's what he's referring to. There's one basis behind what he's saying here in this term that is really an interesting term. When he says worlds, what he's meaning is, and this is it, are you ready? Some of you may even already know. Time. Now think about that just for a moment. Through whom he made time. The literal translation would say, through whom he made the ages. Now, I want you to think about time for a moment. Just for a moment. Think about time. When was the last time you thought about time? When was the last time the idea of time occurred to you that you need to check time? You know, I've been here for about 3.5 years, and I have learned that there is a reason why there's this right over here, this device that we have. It's interesting because this is the first church I've been in where we've had one at that angle, because it's usually right there. So somebody knows when to shut up, right? Or back before we had these type of podiums, there was a wooden podium and there was a clock right here that would tell the preacher when to stop. Or if you really want to go back, how many of you remember any time seeing a preacher taking their wristwatch off and putting it down right by the podium, and then so he's able to keep time? Time is interesting, isn't it? And I want you to imagine for a moment, if it's even possible, a world without time. We can't even imagine that, can we? We can't even comprehend what that would be like. Because time is in our nature. Time is in our being. We can't get away from it. Even in some of the countries that don't push it like we do, they still have this time idea. Even if you don't have a clock, there's still this idea of meeting at a particular time, a particular time of day, whatever it is. We're kind of controlled by time. We're kind of in this spectrum that is full of time, and it is impossible for us to get out of it. Even if we try, it's not possible. It's in our nature about time. I was reading a book recently, and this book was talking about the history of the internet and how things have changed with devices. And as all of you know, I'm a tech guy, so I just love all devices. I don't use paper. I do everything through my iPad, my phone, my watch, everything. It's all. So if Apple ever went down, I would lose everything that I have. But it's interesting, if you ever would want to see me getting ready for what I call a run, as I've talked to you before about when we run, Nicholas and I run, and we've done a couple 5Ks, and I mean, he's running the 5Ks, I've completed the 5Ks. But you know, if you've ever seen me go out the door, especially today, there's something amazing that's happening, because I'm such a tech guy, right? And the first thing is, when it comes to exercise, and this is the way I've been my entire life. I don't know if anybody else is here is like me. But when it comes to exercise, I do everything possible to distract myself from what actually is occurring. Because I don't like to experience the pain that is taking place. So I do everything I can to get my mind off of what I'm actually doing. So I'm trying to convince myself that I'm actually not running. And I'm trying to convince myself that I don't feel any aches or pains, or that I'm not having an issue with breathing, or trying to keep up with somebody else. I do everything possible. So this is what I have. I have my phone, okay? I have my phone. My phone has the music app. The music app connects to my headphones through Bluetooth, no wires. A couple years ago for a gift, I got a Bluetooth set of headphones, so there's no wires that can be tangled up. So I got that. About 3 years ago or so, or 2 years ago, something like that, I finally got one of these, and it was on clearance. It was the one. They just came out with the five, so you know I got this very cheap. And so you can monitor your exercise on here. It tells you your heart rate, tells you everything. But do you know you can also sync your music with it as well? So it syncs with my phone, which syncs with the Bluetooth headphones, so that I can tap here to pause, or I can skip, or I can go to another song right from here. And when I tap it, it goes through my phone, through the air somewhere, into my headphones. Isn't that amazing? Now, just recently, Miranda, being the bargain hunter that she is, if you haven't realized this about Miranda, she is, I've never met a bargain hunter better. If you have anybody that you know you think is, I would definitely have her compete with that. We have enough in our basement to last us for like a 20-year world war. She does everything by balk. I remember the first time we went to the store shopping, and we're going in, and I see what we're looking for, and I get it. No, don't get those. But it's on the list. No, don't get those. Why? They're going to be on sale next week. How do you know that? See, that's the bargain hunter way of thinking, right? Well, she found this pair of shoes. She was out shopping, and she found this pair of shoes, and she asked me if I was interested by texting. Now, these shoes were astronomically priced. way out of anybody's budget, especially ours. But these were, I think it was 75, 80% off, something around there. And she says, would you like these? Because they're very cheap and they're on clearance. Of course, the color is not what I like. I like everything in black. And, you know, she always has to almost special order my black shoes that I like to wear. But these were like these you know, these modern day, it was like a greenish type of thing. And I was like, I don't want to wear that. But the selling point was, there's actually a chip in these shoes that connects to your phone that tells you your speed, your cadence, your stride length. It's like a personal running coach. When you are done, it actually tells you this is what you can improve on next time based upon the shoes connecting through the air to the phone. Now, when I walk out the door to go jogging now, from head to toe, I am a techie. Right, we have wireless headphones, wireless watch, wireless phone, wireless shoes now that are connecting. But it's amazing how technology has done that. But in this book I was reading, I don't remember the exact year, but they were talking about in the early 1980s, I think it was. I believe it was 81, possibly 82, 83, 84, whenever it was. They said that this was the very first time that mankind did not have to set their own watch. First time throughout history. Why? Because the internet did it for you. First time. And then it explained in detail, in the techie way, of what the process it goes through, of what your computer or your phone or your smartwatch, whatever, what it actually goes through, the servers that it pings and hits to get to the central universal clock, and then it pings all the way back for you to actually see the correct time. Now, just that's one of the things that I knew about, but I never really thought about it much till I read this book. How incredible of a thought that is, that was the first time in history that mankind depended on a universal machine to tell us what time it is. That's why we used to have to always remind you about changing your clocks, right? We don't have to do that much anymore, do we? Because it does it on its own. Right? Your phone does it. It's automatic. So I started thinking about that idea and thinking about time, and it just made me start to wonder, and I'm not a genius with this stuff. It's just one of those hobbies I have. I just started to wonder, who's to say that the universal clock is correct? What if it's off by 1 minute? If it's off by 1 minute, everybody's off by 1 minute. What if it's off by 5 minutes? What's to say that it's actually accurate? Because as technical as it gets and as proficient technology gets, yes, it is amazing, but I don't know that mankind can ever get to the place where it's going to be 1,000% accurate compared to God's view of time. Because one of the things that we don't understand is that God actually created time. And that means he lives above time. Now, we can't comprehend that. We don't understand it. It's hard for us to even get a hold of. It's like timelines. God doesn't see things in timelines. We see things in timelines, right? We see things in, well, this era, this happened, this era, this happened, this era. God sees it this way. Take the timeline, turn it this way, turn it into a telescope, and that's how God sees time. We can't comprehend that. So right now, in this moment, we see what's happening in this event and what's going to happen in the next event, and we see what's going to happen in the next event on this timeline. God sees it of this is what's going to happen. He can look all the way to the end if he wants because he's completely above time. Now, we can't comprehend that. We can't understand that. That is such a deep process. But what that does tell us is that there is a source of everything. that we weren't created by an accident. It doesn't matter who you are, what your background is, or where you came from. The earth was not created by an accident. The world was not created by an accident. There is a source, and there was a purpose behind this of God creating the world through Jesus. That there was a reason why God created the world. There was a reason why God created mankind. And there was a reason why God created you. And with the, and the idea of a source, knowing what that source is what we have to get back to as followers of Christ, is understanding why we are here and why we exist and what our purpose is and what the source is. Because the worst thing we could ever do is live outside of the source. When you live outside of the source, what happens is you mess everything up. But when you live within the source, the way that you were created to live, everything works appropriately and accurately. But when you live outside the source, everything becomes a disaster. So we ask the question, why are we here? We are here to live in the source, which is what? The source is Christ, which means my life isn't my own. My life belongs to him, and I am here to live within my source. That's why I'm here. That's my purpose. We touched on this with the Bread and Soup Bible study on Friday, but how many people here enjoy being commanded? You know, like the idea of somebody hasn't commanded me today. I wish somebody would give me a command. I haven't had a command yet today. I enjoy commands. So can somebody just please give me a command? I've never heard anybody say that. And yet that's how we were created. Did you see that we were created to be commanded to? That's how we were created. We were designed that way. From the very beginning, going back to Genesis, that's where it is. You go back to Genesis, and what happens when God creates man? And then he commands them. Look at the word. He commands them. You can eat from any tree. Just don't eat from. And then God's walking through one day. Where are you? I hid because I was naked. What does God say? God says, hey, who told you you were naked? Did you eat from the tree I commanded you? It's the word, look it up. I commanded you not to? From the very beginning, we were created to be commanded and be obedient and be submissive to what he desires. We were never, ever designed or created to do what we want to do or to desire what we want to desire. We were never created to demand and insist our rights because of who we are. No, we were created to submit to him and what he desires. Same thing happens when you get to the New Testament. When you get to the New Testament, the whole idea is about Jesus. I've even had some people say, well, God's different in the New Testament. You have a different God. You have the God of the Old Testament, God of the New Testament. They're different. No, they're the same God, because we just went over that. Jesus was there with creation. So when Jesus begins to speak, he actually used the same word too, because some people think, well, Jesus wouldn't command. He's loving, he's accepting, he's forgiving, which he is, but he also commands. When he said, everything in the law and the prophets come down to two commands, he said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's what fulfills the entire law. Those were Jesus' two commands. What do you mean by command, Chad? I mean they're not suggestions. It's not something you negotiate over. It's not something where he's out asking for you for your opinion. You don't have a choice. It is a command. It's kind of like the parenting idea. No, you don't understand, kid. You don't understand. You will do this. Not asking for your opinion. Not asking for what you have to say. Jesus said to love in a command. You are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself. That's a command. That's not a suggestion. Which means you don't have a choice. Continue on, the end of Matthew, what does he say? All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Command. Go. You're doing this. It's not an option, not a discussion. He's not asking for your opinion. Acts 1:8, he tells the disciples, you will be my witnesses. Did you catch the language there? You will. You don't have a choice. Not asking you for what you think about it. And yet, the hardest problem we have in serving Christ is just that, is that we want to do the opposite. Because it has been ingrained in us from our sinful nature, from the time we are born, that the world isn't about him, that the world is about. And everything is about what I want and what I desire and how I think it should go and the plans and everything's about me instead of being about him. When you start to understand this, the idea of living inside the source and outside the source, it's really interesting when you start to analyze that, because I'm starting to get surprised at how often I am comfortable living outside of the source. How often I'm comfortable living in Chad's world and living in Chad's way, and I'd rather have things the way that Chad wants instead of actually being submitted and actually obeying his commands and being what he desires and what he wants me to be. There's a reason why the author of Hebrews is making this clear, that it's through him, through Jesus, that he made the worlds. It's through him he made the ages. It's through him that he made time, which means, hey, if I were you, I'd submit to him. Because he's the one who's in charge. There's a lot of talk about peace and a lot of talk about wanting peace, not just in a global sense, but peace in your own life and just peace in general. And you just want to live at peace. How many people here want to live at peace? You would just love to live at peace, right? Just any way possible. God, is there any way I could just, please, could I just live at peace? Just let me live at peace. Tired of conflict, tired of the stress, tired of the anxiety, tired of the depression, tired of the pressure, tired of it. Can I just live at peace? Now, when you're asking for that, think about for a moment what you are asking for. What is it you're actually asking for when you say, can I live at peace? Usually it means, can I just be separated from everything that I am facing and everything I am involved in so that I can actually live at peace? And it usually means our comfort. But here's one for you. Are you ready? What we think is peaceful isn't peaceful. There you go. You're dismissed. Think about it for a moment. We were designed to live one way, which means we were designed by a creator, and we were designed to know our place. That's one of the hardest things for us to understand, but it's true. We need to know our place. I know people are offended at a statement like that. You need to know your place. In general, this is everybody. We need to know our place. Why? Because you're not God. Sorry, breaking the news to you, but you're not. You're not God. I'm not God. And I know many of you are saying, thank God for that. But you're not God. I'm not God. We're not God. So what? We need to know our place, which means we need to know where we fit in all this. And too many times we like to play God. We think we know what's best, and the truth is he knows what's best. Well, how do I get peace? Well, the only way you have peace is when you live the way you were designed to live. Well, how was I designed to live? By doing what he says. Anything outside of that, I'm living outside of my source. And when I live outside of my source, no wonder I'm going to be anxious. No wonder I'm going to be frustrated. No wonder I'm going to be depressed, because I'm living outside of how I was created to actually live. There's some element of peace in the idea of, this isn't about me, this is about you. So Jesus, whatever you want to do, I'll do. Whatever you want me to say, I'll say. Wherever you want me to go, I'll go. This isn't my world. This is your world. This isn't, you're the one that did this. You're the one that created it. I'm just kind of along for the ride. I remember in the Gospel of John when the disciples, many disciples left Jesus. They all were upset and they got frustrated and they left Jesus. And Jesus turned around to his disciples and he said, are you going to leave as well? Simon looked at him and said, Lord, where else can we go? We have no other place to go other than you. And I would ask the same question of you today. Where else could you possibly go when he's the one who's created, he's the one who's the source, and he's the one who designed you to live the way he created you to live? So the challenge we get from this passage today, when he says that through whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world, is that we need to recognize that that puts him on a pedestal that is so much bigger than us that we can't even think about someone who's actually beyond us and beyond time. The only thing we can do is submit. And during this Christmas season, every nativity scene that you see, every Advent candle lighting, every Christmas carol you hear should be a reminder that life is not what I want, but only what he wants. And I need to be in my place. Lord Jesus, we thank you today for your word and for your truth and for everything that you mean to us. We ask today that you would go beyond what I've attempted to explain and you would teach us exactly what it is that we need to hear. We ask all these things in your name, the name of Jesus. Amen.